32 minutes past 7 p.m. You're tuned in to WKCR 89.9 FM in New York. Also on the web at WKCR.org. We are in the midst of the Elvin Jones Memorial Broadcast. Elvin Jones passed away yesterday, Tuesday, May 18th in the afternoon. He was 76 years old. We continue in this portion of the memorial broadcast listening to the words of Elvin Jones. This interview was conducted in 1971. Elvin Jones came up to the studio here at WKCR, was interviewed by Vernon Gibbs. As you will hear in the interview, Elvin was about to get started on a run at the Folk City here in New York, and had previously released Genesis and had recorded and was in the process of putting together his next record with a similar group, Merry-Go-Round. Talk of that, of other things going on in the life of Elvin Jones in 1971, of the music industry. So we hear that now. 1971 interview, Elvin Jones up at WKCR. Right now it's 33 minutes past 7 on Wednesday, May 19th. This is WKCR 89.9 FM in New York, Elvin Jones Radio.
First, I'd like to welcome you to WKCR.
Wow.
And, you know,
it's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you for coming up and everything. We were worried about you a few minutes ago.
Why worry?
You know.
I had some technical difficulties.
Yeah, so. We were having some, too. I understand you're opening at Slugs tomorrow.
It isn't Slugs. It's Folk City.
Oh, Folk City.
On West 3rd Street.
Right.
So, we do work Slugs
quite often, a lot. Right.
We will be going in there very soon, but mm-hmm. this particular time it's Folk City.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the first time you worked there?
Yeah, well, it's the first time I've worked there, and I understand that it's the first time that a jazz group has worked there. So right. It'll be sort of a first, or, you know, an initiation or something like that, but at least it'll be nice.
We're
looking forward to it.
You don't think it's going to be any different than working the Vanguard or something?
Well,
it's just another gig, huh?
Well, I don't know. What it is, to me, every time we play, I try to do as well as possible, the best that we possibly can. So mm-hmm. I'm not all that casual about where I'm working or anything. I think every place is important.
Right.
So we'll do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've been all
the
over
very best that we can.
Yeah, you've been all over the world. I mean, played in every. All the free world, as they call it. Have you been to China or anywhere, or Russia?
No, we haven't.
They have festivals there once in a while, don't they?
Well, they do that. And my brother's band is there now.
Oh, where?
In Russia.
Oh, yeah?
They had a 5-week tour there. And then they're supposed to be in Moscow at the time when President Nixon is going to be there. You know? So it really means quite a lot. I think it's very nice. It's a good thing. It's a very important thing for Americans and for the music in general.
Mm-hmm. Somebody called up and heard you were going to be on the air, and they asked, you know, since you're going to be at this club, they immediately thought about the fact that you'd never made a live recording anywhere.
Not with this group. I haven't. We've been thinking about it. We've been kicking that idea around mm-hmm. for a while, and it's just there's a lot of things that are to consider when you think about doing a live recording in a club. You know, mm-hmm. to check out the acoustics and all this and. Find out whether or not it's all right to do it there, because a lot of club owners and at least just don't like for that to happen, because they think it interferes with their business.
Right.
So there's a lot of things to consider, but I would like to do a live recording somewhere, sometime. And I think we will do one in the near future. But as to where we'll do it, I really don't know.
Yeah. Well, who's playing in the group that you have now? What's the personnel?
There's Gene Perla on bass. Mm-hmm. And he's a, well, I think he's a great bass player. He's a, not only that, he's a great person. He's a gentleman. And he's very knowledgeable about music. And he's a enthusiastic student of music. And well, I can't think of anyone I'd rather have playing bass with me.
Right.
And there's David Liebman, who I think is a genius, really. He plays tenor saxophone, soprano, and flute, and he's a very prolific composer.
He's on your new album, right?
Yeah, he's on this. He's on the last one too, Genesis.
Right.
You know, when he first started to play with the off and on, you know. Yeah, but he's a very fine musician. And there's Steve Grossman, who previously his experience was with Miles Davis and some other groups. He's the baby of the group, you know. I mean, he takes up where John Coltrane left off. Yeah, like that. I think you just have to hear him to really appreciate the tremendous talent that he has.
Mm-hmm.
And Don Elias of added with on conga drums, who was another alumnus of Miles Davis's group.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just a percussionist, and he plays conga in a context that isn't it isn't Latin, it isn't Afro, it isn't, but he plays real music with his conga drums. He's a real conscientious musician, and it fits, what he does fits the group feeling so well. He's very, he's another very fine person, and a real, I'm just happy as I can be to have him with us.
Right. So that's the whole group.
Yeah.
Let's see. The last time I saw you at Slugs, I think the group, was it the same group you had? Was it a little different?
Yeah, I think it was the same group the last time you were in there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
because that group was really fine,
That's it. Yeah.
That was when they had the birthday party for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it was some party.
Yeah, it was really together.
It was nice.
The group was really smoking that night, man. You know, I would have been surprised if it had broken up, that song.
Oh, this is we're just really getting together,
right.
The breaking up is something that we don't even think about,
right.
This is something that we're gonna stay together for as long as we live, as long as it lasts, as long as there's breath in our bodies.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I think I've heard
that
before. Yeah, well, I've heard that before, but groups, come and go, and
sure,
people come and go, but in and out of groups
so
fast.
Sure.
What happens? Musical tastes begin to differ. You start going in different directions.
Well, when it happens, I suppose we'll break up then. But otherwise, I can't foresee any disintegration of this group in the near future.
Yeah. It's really together. But one other thing I'd like to ask you, about playing in clubs and recording. When you play, you play a lot of solos. Like I've seen you take, very long solos. Would that be a factor in preventing you from recording a live album because of the limited amount of time that?
Well,
is?
I would imagine that if we do. If and when we do a live album, and I'm hoping it'll be within the foreseeable future, what I do on it, I don't think that won't be a governing factor as to the content of the album at all. If I play a solo, I'll play a solo, and if I, you know, if I don't, then I won't, you know. But the length of it won't have anything to do with what we're what it really is all about. It'll be a live album. It'll be a live album of what the group is doing, and it will hopefully give an honest and forthright projection of the abilities of the musicians involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You're listening to WKCR FM 89.9 in New York. My name is Vernon Gibbs, and the program is called Jazz Alternatives. And right now we're speaking with Elvin Jones, who opens tomorrow at Folk City with his brilliant group that's been together for how long? A year.
Well, you know, we keep adding people to the group. Don Elias happens to be the last person to join the group, so, and he's been there for the last 2 months.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's still a good group, and you should check them out. One thing I'd like to ask you, that I'm sure a lot of people wonder, a lot of people agree on the fact that you're probably one of the best drummers, if not the best drummer in jazz. What do you think you do that's different, that makes you, you know, such a great drummer? And do you think that you're a great drummer? Of course you do.
Well, sure I do. Yeah. I don't think I'm good, you know, fantastic or anything like that, but I know I'm good, and I know I try to play what I know, and I try to play what I know as well as I know how.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have any, you know, I don't have any reason to be bashful about that, or reluctant to say it.
Mm-hmm.
But as to why, you know, people think that I'm better than anybody, I don't know. I don't think that I'm better than anybody else. I think that I know that I have I'm sincere about what I do, and that's all. You know, I try to be honest about what I do.
Mm-hmm. There aren't any technical things that you feel you do that add to your mastery of the drums. You can't even think about it because you're so close to it. Is it something like that?
I never thought of it in that way, but mm-hmm. I always try to. I've studied a long time, and injected as often as I have a chance to play whatever knowledge that I have accumulated into what I'm trying to do. And, you know, sometimes I make mistakes, and sometimes, you know, if it comes out right, it sounds good. If it doesn't, then it's, you know. Mm-hmm. But I try to do what I know.
Mm-hmm. How has the role of the drum changed in the last few years? Has it, you know, the part it plays in a group?
Well, I think that drummers have understood a little bit more about interpretation, and which has made a big difference in their approach to a lot of the contemporary modern jazz.
Mm-hmm.
And that the melodic instrumentalists have realized the newfound knowledge of drummers, and have compensated for that in their composition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just merely a matter of musicians within groups becoming more aware of each other and being more sympathetic to one another while they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of difference, and it just so happens that the drum having been a sort of a neglected kind of instrument for so many years, that now it's becoming more prominent, and that's been, and it's really because of the new understanding that musicians have about the instrument itself.
Right. With this understanding that you're talking about, has it come along at about the same time as the rise of the so-called avant-garde new wave in music? Or did it start before all that began?
Well, I think it started before that. I think this is a byproduct of the understanding, the avant-garde wave, because I don't think any jazz is very dependent on a beat, and a drummer is his purpose and his function within a group is to provide a beat, no matter what it might be, or a rhythm, or you know, anything you want to call it. But nevertheless, it's a foundation for certain melodic patterns, melodic phrasings. So I think this is what had to be realized first. I think the drummer had to find himself before he could actually extend himself to interpretation of modern contemporary music.
Mm-hmm. Was there like a basic beat that that drummers would use when they were playing a certain kind of music, say bebop? Was there a certain beat that they could depend on to get into the groove?
Well, I think it was more of a relaxation into a tempo, it's difficult to explain in words, but essentially, this is what occurred. It was a man has a, say for instance, if you were a drummer, then you suddenly find yourself playing with Dizzy Gillespie, you know, who you've admired for years, and you start a tempo, you know. Well, you have to have enough confidence in yourself to be able to function within that tempo and relaxed enough to make the music significant to the composition, you know. So that's what has been happening. If you understand what I mean.
Well, yeah. Well, you explained it pretty well. It's a hard thing to explain, you know, those kind of things. Do you feel that in general, in people evaluating groups, you know, and looking at them, that drummers generally tend to get bypassed in that evaluation in favor of the people who have to do with the melody?
Well, it had occurred. I don't think it does now so much. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, that problem has been resolved, mm-hmm. more or less. That in the past there had been problems like that, and where unless you were very well acquainted with the individual, then you would have a certain reluctance to extend this, you know, this, give him, you know, lay this weight on this man, mm-hmm. give him that responsibility. And consequently, all of this, these are feelings, and it would reflect in the quality of the music that would be generated.
Mm-hmm.
So, I see that a lot of this has been, this is over now. I think now it's sort of a straightforward kind of thing. I think, everybody realizes that, you know, you see a drummer, you immediately, you don't think, can he do this? You want to know if he's willing to do it, or if he, you know, if he likes it, or, you know. It's an entirely different complexion than it was, say, 20 years ago or 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a new ball game. You know, that's why the music has taken such a resurgence of interest there. People have become much more interested in what is really happening, you know, not so much technically, but some as to the real sound, the quality, the feelings, the emotions that come from the music now.
Mm-hmm. Some people have been mentioning it from time to time. I've heard it over the last few months. They have a feeling that they use the same word that you just used. They say a resurgence of interest. Do you see that?
Well, yeah, I've seen it.
I mean, people actually coming out more and being more into the music than they were.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And it's mainly because of people like yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, you become more interested, and therefore you include it in your format, your programming, in your programming format. You know, and this is multiplied tenfold across the country, you know, blanket, you know, across the country, and it's getting to the on the executive level in the music companies and the record companies, and the media is taking a more of a direct interest in the culture of this country. Mm-hmm. And they're beginning to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it will eventually be felt and by the people who are actually causing this change. Mm-hmm. And not that it's so much of a change; it's just that it's a new direction, it's a new focus. You know, I think. Not putting anything down, but you know, rock music has just about had it, you know. But jazz is still here. It's been here all the time, and it's, you know, and it hasn't been waiting for anything, but some interest in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a wholehearted, honest national level, you know. And I think it's beginning to happen, you know. Thank God.
Right. Somehow we always get to this subject when we talk to people. And I'd like to know if you feel that this interest in it can be controlled by the powers that be.
Well, I don't, you know, like, that's something that goes beyond my, I wouldn't want to comment on that too much because I think that, a lot of things can be controlled, but I don't think you can control the creative force of an individual's mind. I don't think you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's what jazz is.
Mm-hmm. When you as a drummer, when you have a group and you are. You know, you want them to do a certain thing. How does a drummer control the say the melodic direction of how the group moves? Do you tell them like what you want?
If you're with the right people, then you can mm-hmm. you know, then anything you say will be accepted in the way that it should.
Mm-hmm.
But of course you rehearse and you discuss things and you. You can make a suggestion and kick an idea around, and eventually you come up with something that's supposed to be there, that should be there.
Right.
It doesn't necessarily have to be your whole idea. I mean, I'm speaking as, but it can be the cumulative effect of everybody's participation.
Mm-hmm. What about when you record? Do you have the tunes written out before? Do you have just chords written, or do you have idea?
There's always a form. Mm-hmm. It's just like, you know, this is actually this is one of the falsies, I think, of the way the layman more or less thinks about jazz music, that it's something that's haphazard and off the top of your head and all that. Well, this is true insofar as the soloing and all that is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But composition is composition. Whether it's and jazz is closer to what we recognize as classical composition than any other form of music that you see in this country.
Mm-hmm. So you know you have the things written and have it mm-hmm. already. Okay. You were talking about rock before. I guess a lot of people have heard about the duel that you were supposed to have with Ginger Baker.
Did you ever have it? Yeah.
What happened?
Well, it came off to, you know, it turned out to be very exciting and very, it was just, I had a ball, you know, and so did Ginger, you know.
Where did it take place?
It was in London, in, mm-hmm. at the London Lyceum Theater last February. Mm-hmm. And so I went, you know, it was about just my wife and I went over, and we rehearsed with Ginger. I played with his band and learned all his music and all that. And mm-hmm. the night of the, I discovered, for one thing, that Ginger Baker as a musician is a tremendous musician, and he's a phenomenal drummer, mm-hmm. and all these things that I had in my mind, and all the things that he probably had in his mind about me, and about the, you know, it was, they were just dissipated by the fact that we were both going in the same direction as insofar as our musical aspirations were concerned. You know, the concert or the contest, as so called, turned out to be just a great, a very rewarding musical experience for the both of us.
Mm, did you have it in front of an audience?
No, there were about 8 or 10,000 people there.
Uh-huh. And it was advertised as the Great Showdown.
Yeah.
Did you have your groups with you, or was it just
I was alone, but I played with his group.
Right. I see. What group was that at that time?
The Air Force.
The Air Force, right. That broke up. Is there any great amount of technical difference between rock drumming and jazz drumming?
There's a certain form with rock drumming. Mm-hmm. I mean, a certain basic form. I don't say, you know, it's just, it can be just as creative as jazz drumming in its own way. It's mainly dependent on dynamics. And dynamics and with a set form, and you can change the form and you can change the dynamics, and you know, it's just as flexible in at least the way Ginger Baker plays it as jazz drumming is, and just as interesting. I was very much interested in that particular form, because he utilizes some drummers from Nigeria and East Africa.
So you mean all those drummers?
All this
playing?
Was going on while we were, you know, just a ball. I'm telling you,
must have been fantastic.
Yes, it was.
Yeah, you sound as if you know you were surprised at how well it came off and how well that his whole group played.
I wasn't. I was surprised in a way, but I thought it was going to be very competitive. You know, that's what I had, and you know, I really felt it, and I thought that it was going to be that. You know, I was thinking to myself, here's this guy who's going to, you know, try to, you know, play better, you know, do something, you know, and I didn't feel like being a I didn't want to try to compete with him as one person to another. You know, I wanted to play music, you know. I wanted to play the drums, you know, the way I play them, and he could play the way he played. I wanted to make it to see if it was a possibility of us playing together without, you know, all that fighting or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. So it didn't turn out that way. I was, you know, I was that was the pleasant part of the surprise, because it just didn't, you know, after we got to know each other, you know, I suppose we both realized simultaneously that this wasn't something that, you know, it was an honest effort. It was really, it was a beautiful kind of thing. It was a, I'll never forget. It was one of the things that happened in my life that I'll never forget. You know, it was really a beautiful experience for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm glad it turned out okay. Let's talk about your tenure with the Coltrane Group. Mm. And, you know, the things that happened at that time. Would you say that this group was probably the most influential? That's a leading question, of course. Influential group of you know, that period of in beginning the kind of music that it did, in pioneering the so-called avant-garde music.
I think that
very leading question.
Yeah. I don't know what leading was, but I think that you know, John Coltrane was you know, absolutely the master of. Mm-hmm. What, you know, I don't think any avant-garde has been played since then, since he died. And I believe sincerely that he was probably the only person, the only instrumentalist in that really understood what avant-garde meant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because everything that he played, you could feel it was swinging. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I really don't. I haven't, you know, a lot of things that I hear that are supposedly progressive and avant-garde-ish and all. It's you know, there's just no direction. There's no, you know, it's like meaningless.
Mm-hmm.
But John Coltrane played things. They had meaning. You know what I mean? They had a definite meaning. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he really understood what it was all about.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that that no one else is.
Well, I haven't heard everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
But the guys I've heard, you know, I think they go to a certain point, and they, you know, something is lacking. You know, I'd like to be honest about it. You know,
mm-hmm.
But some, you know, they just don't. I think it's a matter of developing. Yeah, it's a matter of development, I'm sure.
You think maybe some of them try to play this kind of music before they're ready?
Yeah, well, that essentially is. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, you could, if you want to say in a few words, yes, that could sum it up just as well as anything.
Mm-hmm. Did the group, you know, have a definite, like, a concept of what they were trying of the difference that they were trying to establish, the difference between what was and what was to be?
Do you mean John Coltrane's
yes,
group?
Yes, yeah.
Well, you know, things in that group, this was a, things happened there that I've never experienced anything like that before. It was so silent. Things happened spontaneously, you know. We would go into a studio for a recording, for instance, and there would have been no preparation for the recording. All we knew about the date was that we'd had to be at the studio at a certain time, and then we would get there, and we'd start talking about one thing or another. He said, well, I think we should do this like this and this. And then he said, okay, let's play it. And we played it to him, and it would be recorded, you know, maybe the first take or the second, you know. And this next tune, we would discuss things like that, and then we would go on and record it, and it would be mm-hmm. the same thing.
You recorded most of the album?
I've never seen any music at all, and not written in any of the studio dates that we recorded. It was all memory and discussion and
mm-hmm.
debate.
Mm-hmm. Did the, I mean, all four of you were
yes.
completely involved
yeah.
in the creation of it?
Completely.
Uh-huh. What the question that I was trying to establish was, you know, whether at the time you were doing this, that you were aware of the fact that you were doing something that was totally new, because musicians always, you know, seem to indicate that, well, you know, this has already been done, so we can't do it anymore.
Well, the way it happened, really, I think everything seemed to be an extension of what we had done, of something that we had been doing, and maybe in the club the night before, mm-hmm. or we would start something in the studio and finish it in the club later that night. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like that. It was just a continuation of things going on. It wasn't stop here, start there. You know, it was just some ideas that, you know, I mean, real sound ideas. Mm-hmm. That were developed like that, musical ideas.
Yeah, I see. You, it always seemed to me that there was a very, I don't know if this word it applies adequately, but there was a very spiritual aura surrounding.
Definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
What you were doing.
Yeah. It was, not only musically, but socially, and in every form of contact that we had was always the same, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I would wake up in the morning with the desire, you know, to see these guys later on that night, yeah. Or later on maybe speak to them on the phone or anything, you know. I would just have that. Well, it was just it was a beautiful feeling, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's spiritual, I'm sure. It was quite spiritual.
Yeah, I see. Well, you know, it's hard to know what to say after that. What about, you know, in your own music, what you're doing now? Do you feel, you know, that this is in any way an extension of that, or...
Yes, I feel that way, and you know, on occasion, you know, I don't feel it all the time, but I do feel it on occasion. You know, there are times when I feel it, and it's most of the time is when we have contact with each other, some kind of contact, either some sort of communication.
Mm-hmm.
Then I get that feeling.
Right, I see. Okay, we'll talk about the new album just briefly. It's called Merry-Go-Round, right?
Yes.
And it's just been released on Blue Note. And we won't have... Okay. And we only have about 2 minutes left of airtime. And unfortunately, like, I know I could sit here and talk to you all night, but just have that amount of time. We'd like to thank you for coming up.
It's a pleasure.
And we hope you have a successful run.
Thank you.
At Folk City. And, you know, we hope
come
your music...
Come by, you know, come down.
I will. We hope your music, you know, continues as beautifully as it has so far.
Thank you.
This has been Jazz Alternatives. My guest tonight was Elvin Jones, who will be playing down at Folk City. So if you want to check out what he was talking about, you know, go down there and see for yourself. My name is Vernon Gibbs, and I'll be...
And that was an interview with Elvin Jones in the early part of 1972. He was up talking a little bit about his new album, Merry-Go-Round, and his upcoming gig at Folk City with Vernon Gibbs.